All right. Together we've been looking at Peter's admonition to the churches of Asia Minor. We've talked about their behavior and response to life in a society that does not share their ideals. Peter reminds them they're foreigners and exiles. They're different in the way they live, but their very lives can demonstrate fulfillment despite being ostracized because they can reflect their true and heavenly citizenship and rise above their situations. Not only that, but the response of the pagans around them will be to glorify God when they see this exemplary lifestyle of good and have no reason to fault the Christians. Peter begins his explanation of submission widely with a general admonition to submit, or sometimes translated subject, to authorities because they've been put in place by God to bring order. Submission has a bad rap, but the word here in context is not about being a doormat. It's better to think of it as taking our proper place in society. We are to fear only God, but show honor and respect to everyone. Human institutions should have no inherent fear for us because we are a people who do what is right. Then Peter chooses one particular group to address, slaves. Whether they have good masters or a harsh one, he reminds them that when they are mistreated, they have both an example and one who lifts us up like straying sheep. Jesus is our model. He watches over what is most valuable to his Father, our eternal souls. And this brings us to another group that Peter chooses to address specifically, spouses. In the first seven chapters of chapter 3, he speaks to wives and then to husbands. The encouragement made to slaves made no mention of masters, but here both parties in the marital contract are addressed. It is true that much greater weight is given to the discussions for the wives. Some commentators see this as a reality of speaking to the more vulnerable group. Others suggest that in the church situation that Peter's addressing, slaves were far more common than were slave owners, and it's also likely that women were better represented than men in these churches. One thing we should not lose sight of is the context of this section. It starts a new chapter in our Bibles, but remember, it did not do that in the original. We may have a tendency to take this as a primer for wives, but it is in the context of subordinating ourselves for Christ that we find this passage. And marital situations, like all others, come under the law of love laid down by Christ. And just a side note, the first time I wrote that, I misspelled marital as martial. And I really hope that your homes and your family life are not ruled by martial regulations. So it's with some trepidation that I begin this section. I've never been a wife. I cannot really understand and empathize with the demands of that role. Furthermore, when women come together to study, they often focus on what it means to be Christ-like in their marriage and family. So what can I possibly say that might be new or thought-provoking to the women of the congregation who are wives? Husbands, on the other hand, can point to the dearth of address to them and gloss over the powerful message to them. Yet we will see that there are at least four admonitions in their short section. Peter says, wives. So immediately we understand this is not addressed to women in general, but to those who have chosen to place themselves in a relationship and family with a husband. In the Greek, his first words are likewise, or alternatively in other translations, in the same manner, in the same way. So it points back to something that we've already seen. Joel Green says this is rich with possible antecedents. What behavior is it that wives are to model? We certainly have a parallel to the household slaves and their actions in relation to those of their masters out of a reverent fear of God. Chapter 2 and verse 18. We also have the more general address we spoke of in 2:12, where the motivation is once again for the Lord's sake, and its summary in 2:17 to show proper respect to everyone. But I think the strongest case should be made for Christ's example outlined in chapter 2, verses 21 through 25. To this you were called because Christ suffered for you. To this you were called because Christ was your example. And what exactly is Peter asking wives to do? Submit or subordinate yourselves to your husbands. So let's look a little more at this word, submit. It's the same word from verse 13 of chapter 2, addressed to all Christians in relation to authorities. It's made up of two roots. The first meaning to put under, and the second to place in order or to appoint. It was used in the Greek military to detail the arrangement of troops in orderly ranks under a commander. In non-military use, it referred to voluntarily cooperating or giving in order to fulfill a responsibility. So this word carries both a dynamic finding of your place and the idea that it was a choice made to keep proper order in the family. What the word is not is the opposite of the idea of an exercise of power. In other words, it's not surrender or capitulation, nor is it the opposite of retaliation. When we read it, we may think of it as resignation and withdrawal. Rather, Green points out finding and occupying responsibly one's place in society is more to the point. And this fit well with the Roman household code that we've talked about before, in which the male was the head and all others, especially the wife, willingly accepted a subordinate position in order to make the operation of the family a success. Yet Peter delivers this directive not to meet the Roman ideal, though it does. Instead, this is echoing the passage we just studied in which Christ entrusted himself to God for a greater cause, that of our redemption. The most important reason that Peter obligates wives to this is also looking to a greater cause, so that they, that is, unbelieving husbands, may be won over. Marital submission to a man, especially an unbelieving man, is hard. The expectation of the Roman family was that the wife and children would even adopt the man's culture in all ways. It included the worship of his gods. Plutarch, in his Advice to Bride and Groom, says this: "A woman ought not to make friends of her own, but to enjoy her husband's friends in common with him. The gods are the first and most important friends. Hence, it is becoming for a wife to worship and to know only the gods that her husband believes in." Think about that one. Imagine the stress that new Christian women with unbelieving spouses would feel. No wonder Peter later counsels not to give in to fear. Wives did have some autonomy at this time, but to resist such an important institution as a man's religion must have caused great tension. Against this, Peter shows wives that they have an opportunity to win souls to the Lord. Peter says, without words. Peter's not looking for preaching or contesting against those husbands. He has a different path in mind. It is modeled, not spoken. Various studies have argued that up to 93% of communication is nonverbal. More recent numbers tone that down a little bit, but they still say 60 to 70%. But Peter clearly understands that right character and behavior has a most important role in winning over even husbands of opposition. Peter goes on to challenge the cultural norm of beauty. It's far more than skin deep. Apparently, Roman society and particularly women went to great extremes to be noticed. Our fast fashion fads have nothing on the society that Peter writes to. The Roman writer Juvenal says, very much tongue in cheek, but with some real social commentary about hairstyles. The attendants will vote on the dressing of the hair as if a question of reputation or life were at stake. So great is the trouble she takes in quest of beauty. With so many tears does she load, with so many continuous stories does she build up on high her head. She is as tall as Andromache in front, behind she is shorter. You would think her another person. Peter advocates instead for a different hallmark of beauty, the inner spirit that is gentle and quiet. The word translated adornment by the NIV is cosmos. We talked about that a few minutes ago. The cosmos or universe is one idea, but there are two concepts that seem to have at first little in common. The other word that we get from that is cosmetic. But they both hold the concept of order. The cosmos is order that God created out of chaos. In a couple of weeks, we will see the magnificence of that in the eclipse. Cosmetic surgery attempts to recreate normalcy and function for those who are injured. Both are highly visible to us, the stars of the night sky and children who have had successful repair of cleft palates. Warren Wiersbe, speaking of Roman and modern women, separates beauty from glamour, comparing the two things. Glamour is artificial and external. True beauty is real and internal. Glamour can be put on and taken off. True beauty is intrinsic and ever-present. Glamour is corruptible and fading. True beauty is growing and becoming better. The message to 21st century wives is still the same. The putting on of eye-catching fashion does not make you feel better. Shopping, while fun, does not make for character. I suspect that if Peter had included more, he would say to the men, the accumulation of toys that will not bring happiness. Peter then reminds us of the example of godly women. Their adornment was internal and not just designed to win competition of hairstyles. I really like it when the Bible uses flawed characters as examples. They're far more approachable. Peter chooses Sarah. She made mistakes. She was the wife of Abraham, who probably made even more mistakes. Yet both of them are remembered in Hebrews chapter 11 as members of the heroes of faith. Peter encourages with the words that you are Sarah's daughters if you do what is right and do not give in to fear. Having the courage to worship according to their hearts, the God of the Bible would certainly have produced a reason for fear of reprisal of a non-believing husband. It certainly could have created a life situation of constant anxiety, but the gospel points to a better way. Live in responsible recognition that subordinating yourself to others, particularly in this case, an unbelieving husband, and in doing good, wins hearts to Christ. Well, at long last, we get to the address of the husbands. The wives in the crowd are saying, well, it's about time. The husbands are dreading what comes for them in the way of a challenge. And let me be clear, that the admonition to submission is a heavy ask of the wives. So hang on, you too are going to be heavily challenged, as were the wives. Again, Peter, addressing husbands in verse 7, uses the phrase in the same way or likewise. And so now we not only have this list of Roman family situations that the wives look to, but we now have the advice added to the wives to add to this list. There's no exclusivity to the feminine side of humanity when it comes to God's love of a peaceable and gentle spirit. Galatians 6:1 admonishes all to restore those caught in sin in a spirit of gentleness. While the outward behaviors may be different for husbands, we learned outward appearances are not what God looks at. The inward heart must be the same, one following in the same way that their Lord did, trusting God. Well, firstly, Peter directs husbands to live with their wives. This isn't about sharing the same address. Rather, it points to a much deeper physical relationship. Husbands and wives are roomies, of course, but they're much more. They share an intimate physical relationship, one that men have a tendency to compartmentalize. Tripped up on that one. But that women consider as part of a much greater whole of lives being knit together. Men often go out with the boys to golf or take in a sporting event or to the pub. Wives are often left home and left out. A husband must put his wife's financial, social, and emotional needs above his own if he is living a life of submission to God's will for him as a husband. Furthermore, if there are children involved, a wife depends upon the husband to be the father to the children that directs, corrects, and lovingly supports them in order for her to feel loved and upheld. Secondly, husbands are told to live in knowledge or consideration. Mrs. Elsa Einstein was asked if she understood Dr. Einstein's theory of relativity. She replied, "No, but I understand the doctor." The importance of shared and meaningful communication in a marriage is a success that cannot be overemphasized. An oft-cited study revealed that marriage partners of the last century shared an average of 37 minutes a week in meaningful communication. This is not, as Peter puts it, living considerately with a spouse. Lack of meaningful communication particularly affects the wife of the family, who desires above all a relationship that is growing and vibrant. The relationship will only flourish, as Warren Wiersbe puts it, when there is such a protective atmosphere of love and submission that husband and wife can disagree and still be happy together. Next comes an admonition to respect, honor, or understanding for the weaker vessel in the older translations, weaker partner in the NIV. The term weaker vessel is also fraught with difficulties in our mind. It doesn't mean fragile or inferior. It reflects the times that Peter was writing to and the prevailing thoughts. The female of our species is superior in many ways to the male. The life expectancy for women is higher in virtually every culture. Women are more resistant to infection than men. And the feminine form is hardened against the rigors of childbearing that men could not endure. We're different. We each have pluses and minuses. So what does Peter mean by a weaker vessel? Let me suggest that in the context of these wives, there were two particular areas where they were more vulnerable and thus at risk. One, they were physically weaker. We accept this at face value. And it opens the door for physical domination by a husband. That's still true today. Domestic abuse is something that has long been closeted for the sake of the family name. Today, more and more relationships dissolve as a result of this evil. Husbands, this is the antithesis of honoring the wife. There can be no room for this kind of behavior in a Christian marriage. The second area where I believe Peter is revealing the wife to be in a weaker position is that of socially. While the Roman women had made great strides of emancipation, they were still of a lower social level than men. Again, this is still true to some extent today when women who work bring home 16% less in Canada than men. And even among women who do work, they do well over half of the laundry and meal preparation. That's from StatsCan 2017. Peter speaks of wives as weaker vessels because women's societal role was considered to be of lighter weight in matters of politics and governance. In direct contrast to this, Peter reminds husbands that the wives are equally heirs with God's gift of life through his Son. There can be no more empowering thought than this one. God does not distinguish between Jew and Gentile, slave and free, male nor female. All are co-heirs and members of God's chosen family. Finally, husbands are given the most important personal reason of all to honor their wives, so that nothing will hinder your prayers. This particular verse is addressed to believing husbands. The unbelieving ones aren't in the congregation to hear this, are they? In the same way that Jesus admonished that if you had something against a brother, you must put down your offering to God and go and be reconciled to your brother, Peter looks at acceptable prayer. Only when your conflict with a brother was resolved would your offering be acceptable to God. Only when a husband's responsibility to honoring his wife is fulfilled is he in a position for God to hear his prayers. Until that time, God cannot hear his prayer over the fear and anxiety of his wife. Peter's admonition here is to the marital situation. Whether it involves only believers or not, wives, submit to your husbands. That means willingly take a role that defers to the leadership of the husband and discharge your responsibilities in that role to build a better family. It's an obligation of the Lord. But it is also an opportunity to win a non-believing husband without words. It is the adornment of the heart that surpasses the adornment of the body. It is because Christ has done the same for you in taking his lowly role for the glory of the Father. Husbands, live physically with your wife in consideration and respect, honoring them and supporting them with courtesy and grace. This is not just for her. It is for your family and children, if you're blessed by them. It is for outsiders who watch what a Christian relationship looks like, because as Christ followers, you too are on a mission field to friends and acquaintances. But most importantly, it's for your own spiritual life. If you want to be right with God so that he hears your prayers, devote yourself to honoring a woman who is also honoring you. Both partners submitting to each other because Christ loves his church above all and is our example of submission. Next time, Peter's going to wrap up this argument for Christians by once again appealing to all of his flock, his entire flock, no matter what their circumstance.